Labour scruffs like Robin Corbyn should be barred from addressing the House unless they pull their socks up.
It's not a fashion parade, it's not a gentleman's club, it's not a banker's institute. It's a place where the people are represented.
Is that the jumper that your mum made?
Yes, it is.
She didn't make the shirt as well, I suppose.
No, she didn't make the shirt. That came from the co-op.
Since Jeremy Corbyn became MP, there's been a narrative within mainstream media to completely embarrass his cause and genuinely give factless information about what he's doing, such as going to dinner with Stop the War or not singing the national anthem. And recently we saw Stephen Dougherty's on-air resignation on the BBC's Prime Minister Questions.
I've just written to Jeremy Corbyn to resign from the front bench. I agreed to serve on Jeremy's front bench for a number of reasons. I had very well-publicised differences with him on foreign policy and defence and national security, but I recognised the mandate that Jeremy had been given by the party, and I also have areas where I wholeheartedly agree with him.
So why have you resigned?
On tax credits, climate change, many other issues, fighting the trade union bill, and I was proud to lead that work.
So I'm here today with Dr. Des Friedemann to talk about impartiality within the BBC. So Des, would you agree that the BBC has always been biased, or has Corbyn simply brought to light what has always been the case?
I think that Corbyn, his election to leader of the Labour Party, has presented with some real problems because he is someone who represents, you know, a different constituency from the grassroots left, and also doesn't play by the normal rules of the game. In fact, pretty purposefully, he has decided to speak directly to supporters and to try and leapfrog the journalists who traditionally would have had enormous amounts of attention from politicians. So I think they were uncomfortable with the way he treated them. And of course, many of them just don't understand where he's coming from politically. This is someone who has represented a challenge to many of the things that, you know, newspaper proprietors, senior managers at broadcasters stand for. So there's going to be, you know, suspicion of him. And I think that the way that they react, their almost instinctive reaction is to paint him as the extremist, to paint him as this oddball, to paint him as a threat, to paint him as lots of kind of contradictory things. Mm. But always, everyone to the right of him is a moderate, but Corbyn is seen as the extremist. And that will take different forms by different journalists and in different programmes. But basically, I think the whole sections of the press and of broadcast news as well just don't quite get what Corbyn represents. And so the easiest thing for them is just to paint him as this either dangerous character or as, you know, this gentle eccentric. So you see a sort of, you know, wavering between these two stereotypes.
So do you think that the press needs to do a better job in talking about Cameron's policy and treating them like they aren't as extreme as they can be, whilst Corbyn is seen as more extreme?
Well, no one ever talks about Cameron's policies using the language of extremism. Mm. Now, you might think that what is being done to the NHS, what is being done to council housing, what has been done in terms of waging wars, you could say that is fairly extreme action in terms of what that's going to do to British people, to Syrian civilians. But of course, the language of extremism is used against the left, not against the right or against conservatives. So you would want them to have, I mean, if they're going to be critical, good, the media should be critical. You know, people who are studying journalism and who become journalists, they're not there just to sort of, you know, paint the world in the kindest possible tones. They should be asking tough questions, but they don't ask equally tough questions of different people. And obviously, you know, by and large, what you might see is the right of centre politics is treated as the norm, and therefore anything to the left, you know, you have to explain yourself, you have to, you know, you're always painted as someone who is beyond the pale. So yeah, we would want there to be equal treatment, but you don't expect it from a press system which is by and large owned by billionaire proprietors, or from broadcast system which is regulated in a completely different way. You know, they are operating under impartiality regulations which tell them they cannot take sides, but again, you know, impartiality is a pretty hard thing to police. Mm. So they often just see impartiality as you have to balance out Cameron versus a right-wing Labour leader. And that represents all the views there are. That for them would be impartiality. So what do you do when you get a Corbyn who doesn't play by those rules and who stands to the left of the traditional party leaders? How does impartiality work? And actually, I think you will see many examples, both in press and broadcasting, where, no, in press they are under no obligation to be impartial. But, I mean, there's been an extraordinary, I think, fairly determined, purposeful attempt to cast him as this, as I've said already, either as this villain or as this clown. So he can't do anything right in the media, even though Corbyn himself wants to play by different rules. When he is worth taking seriously, he's immediately an extremist, you know, someone who isn't willing to press the nuclear button in the name of peace or in the name of actually just not contributing to the murder of millions of people. How is that exactly an extremist position? But, you know, it's comfortable journalism for those people who want to put it like that.
So do you think that the BBC is lacking in its investigative journalism? And could this be to do with the cuts that the BBC have faced currently?
I don't know if it's so much the cut, because it's not as if there's been a drastic turn to the right in the BBC since the cuts. I mean, I think there has been a very different atmosphere inside BBC news gathering. I mean, the BBC is a huge organisation. We're concentrating, I think, for our discussion around the news gathering operation. There has been a significant change, I would say, in the tone and confidence of its investigative reporting since what happened after the Iraq war with the Hutton inquiry, where the BBC has effectively, you know, introduced, it's a fantastically more small C conservative, we can talk about the big C conservative, but small C conservative, cautious institution. And because of the most recent attacks on it by a Conservative government, you know, forcing it to lower its budget, it just thinks that in order to fend off future attacks, it should be as cautious as possible. Now, the caution actually, in this case, just translates into, you know, effectively and all too often reproducing government messages or government agendas. And I think that's what happened with the recent choreography around the resignation of the shadow minister, you know, deliberately timed to have maximum damage to Jeremy Corbyn just ahead of question time in Parliament. So that is certainly overstepping even its own impartiality rules, you know, because some people have defended what the BBC does because it's a scoop. But, you know, a scoop in terms of impartiality rules for broadcasting would not have allowed the choreography that we saw taking place that morning, waiting, delaying the announcement, timing it to cause maximum impact, negative impact against Corbyn. And, you know, you see that there's a line of questioning by some of the most senior BBC journalists, people like Laura Koonsberg and Andrew Neil, that they do seem to be fairly obsessed. I mean, Laura Koonsberg and her tweets, like Corbyn seems to be the story, of course, not his policies so much as, you know, just splits in the cabinet. And, you know, there is this, you know, once you might forgive, but this has been going on for quite a long time, ever since he's become leader. And I think that just reflects, you know, partly maybe the personal politics of the people behind it. It probably affects the very small C conservative culture, but also reflects, you know, what their willingness just to do the bidding of a conservative government in the hope that this will buy them time and, you know, a charter renewal. So I don't know if it's not the case that people sit down and plot. I think there's probably a taken for granted assumption that Corbyn is some, you know, is not good news for vested interest in this country, and therefore he needs to be challenged.
So do you think that the recent Stephen Dougherty's on-air resignation, prepared by the BBC with Laura Koonsberg sealing the deal, comes as a surprise, considering that BBC's Daily Politics executive editor, Robbie Gibb, was a former chair of the Federation of Conservative Students, as well as the brother of Tory MP Nicholas Gibb, and the former chief of staff, Tory Minister Francis Maud. Wouldn't this make impartiality within the BBC completely impossible?
Well, his background was news to me until last week when all of this happened. He wouldn't be the only person with, you know, impeccable Tory credentials. We had the same thing with New Labour Labour as well, you know, there are people who have, you know, partisan positions, which, they, you know, fair enough, they can bring them, everyone has a past, they can bring them into the BBC, but it's when they, I think, as Laura Koonsberg did last week, I think overstepping the boundaries, you start then to ask the questions about political backgrounds of the producers and the journalists. So I forgive, you know, everyone is entitled to their political history, why not? But actually, when it just oversteps the mark and seems to be, you know, fairly single-mindedly trying to paint a particular view of Corbyn. So we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, the BBC is this kind of contradictory institution. It's set up as to be a public space in, you know, which is a counter to commercial broadcasting and to market. But on the other hand, it was set up and has always been operated at fairly close quarters to the British state. Mm. You know, it was the British state that did set it up. It is the British state which indirectly has been responsible for shaping its the funding and directly shaping the charter. So when you have those kinds of relationships and the BBC has never been able to be truly independent of the state, it doesn't come as a big surprise if a major broadcaster reflects the views of vested interests, mm-hmm. that it reflects the views of whatever government is in power. And in the end, the BBC was slightly cowed by New Labour after Iraq. The BBC is nervous about antagonising a Conservative government because it doesn't want to undermine its future. So it can't fulfil the independence that actually is at the heart of its charter. So I'm always a little bit, call me naive, I'm a little bit shocked about how some of the, you know, the old Oxbridge networks come out. I'm surprised at how clear it is. Mm. But at one level, no, I'm not surprised, because any powerful media institution bound to reflect the networks of power in which it finds itself. You know, and the BBC isn't exclusive to that. It may be that the BBC, because it's the most trusted of the news organisations, that it's more important that it is held to account when, you know, it breaks its own impartiality rules.